to the club. Whatever, it's fine.
It's literally a cloud outside your window. You just see the data
Like
fall.
data vapor.
Yes.
Data vapor. That sounds like a great name for an album.
It is a pretty good name.
The plot to a probably a long story.
Yeah.
I smoke in the data vapor.
Yeah, big hit of data vapor. Actually, I don't want a hit of data vapor. That sounds like a really bad experience.
Nightmarish.
Yeah. Just, oh God, I can
All
taste
the
like strychnine.
vibes
I didn't want those memes. Why am I getting
Yeah.
those memes?
It took some data vapor, and now all the waves are particles.
I took some data vapor and all the particles are waves.
I took some data vapor and both.
I took some data vapor. Now my sinuses are clear.
That's good.
Oh man.
But
Yeah.
So how have you been, man? How have you been?
I think as I imagine the question is directed to me.
Yes. Well, I don't care about Brian. I talk to him all the
All
time. Whatever.
right. I'm good. I'm good. Actually, I'm not. I am. It's just, I get I'm in the I get the
Particles
springtime.
and
I'm getting the particles and waves real hard. I just finished a big project at school and I've got the like post project blues.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm okay. But yeah, like the last week I've been like, it's just not ideally. It wasn't a good kind either.
Oh.
But I'm good. Everything's great. We're like I've got fun stuff to work on and life is good. My beautiful wife is going to have a child.
Oh shit.
But I will be the father of. I should
Nice.
clarify
That's
that.
good. That's a bonus. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm gonna have a daughter in June.
Oh my God.
I'm
Congratulations.
very, yeah, I'm super stoked about that.
Do you know when in do you have a date on June?
Well, there's a due date, which is June 4th. And I'm of course like I immediately looked up the space weather. And I
Yeah.
was like, okay, well, we've got to. I guess people were like, well, it's your first kid, so they're going to be late. And I'm be late. I'm trying to keep the moon in Taurus because everything is in Gemini. This kid's going to have like a massive Gemini stellium. It's like Sun conjunct Venus, Mercury, and Jupiter all in Gemini. And the moon is like on the fourth, the moon is in Taurus. But very shortly there, I think it actually has it ingresses on the fourth, so we've got a day or so of wiggle room. But I'm like, we got to have some planets that are not in Gemini, or this child's gonna kill me.
Is that
just sheer volume of words? You will be destroyed.
can't hear you, Brian.
Really?
Yeah, well, I can barely hear you.
That's
I wonder
lame.
if that's on my end.
It's probably my end, because I don't have the normal setup. I'm using the shit mic that's
It's
built.
funny,
Gotcha.
I can hear you. I can hear you clear, so
Oh.
what you find, it's probably your
Let
phone.
me just put this a little bit. Will y'all just keep talking?
Sure,
What?
sure.
I'm trying to look up because like June 4th is that when does it switch over to Cancer? When do you get?
June 21st.
Okay.
My wife's birthday is the 21st. She's just barely, it's funny, she's just barely a Cancer.
Okay.
And
Oh shit, so that would be a Gemini child, sun sign.
yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Major. I'm glad, and I want to, I mean, whatever. The kid's going to be great, whatever. But yeah. I would love to have, I'd love for the child to have a happy, dignified moon. She'll have Mars and Aries, which will be nice and strong.
I think it's
just a lot of, sorry. Say what? The petition?
Magicians having kids, it's like the closest that they'll come to that, like, it's like brushing elbows with eugenicists. Like, like, you're like looking at, eyeballing it, like, what kind of kids is this gonna be? What kind of kids? Oh, just push it this way. If we could just engineer, wait.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on, baby. Keep it in there. Hold on.
Yeah.
I didn't like to wander into these woods.
Exactly. Well, that's the conversation I had with my wife, where I started talking about this stuff, and she was like, okay, yes. A, yes. B, it just, let's have it. We just love the child.
She's right.
Okay, you make a compelling point.
God, can you imagine if, like, you were like two astrologers as a couple, and you fucking have a kid? That got it has to be a goddamn nightmare.
Oh, like, yeah.
For the kid.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that too. Yes, 100% for that kid.
Yeah. So that's what's been going on with me. We're just getting ready for that. And for the most part, the terror. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. The terror has not really arrived yet for me, at least. I'm excited. It's weird though, because, you know, my wife is having a very embodied, quite literally embodied experience of it. And there's this relationship that is forming already with the little one, and I'm like, I'm outside of it. I don't feel like left out or anything, but I'm like, I look forward to meeting you. But for now,
have you seen the new Dune movie?
I have not yet.
Oh, I'm so many things were going through my head too, like reflecting.
Yeah, you've read Dune though.
No.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
Yeah, I guess this would actually be a spoiler if we made these jokes.
It's okay. I'm actually, I don't have, I do intend to see the movie, but I don't have a spoiler, like.
Oh, you don't spoiler, like, okay.
Okay, I will, like, I will watch all the trailers. I will, like, get on Wikipedia. I will be like, what happens in this movie? Yeah, I don't, like, I don't have a spoiler.
So you're very comfortable with, like, the eighth grade English version of, like, let's tell you everything that happens in the Shakespeare play before we actually read the fucking play. So you're totally okay with that.
Basically. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so in this, it's really, like, what you're talking about with your wife and the baby is so hilarious, because in the movie and in the book, they take this like psychedelic, basically, that's called the Water of Life, that, like, makes you access, like, all of your genetic line. Like, you can like connect back into your prehistory and use that to fan out into other people and, like, up to the present. And this woman takes it, and she doesn't tell them that she's pregnant. So she becomes aware, and her fetus becomes aware at the same time. And then they develop this, like, they're like talking to each other the whole time.
That's rad. Like,
yeah.
Like if you had a Buddha in your belly, you know?
Yes.
Totally awake, like,
fully conscious. Yeah.
That's awesome. I don't think we have a Buddha, but we do have someone who likes avocado and who likes saxophone. Anytime we hear saxophone music.
You're having a hipster.
Yeah. We went and saw Kelsey Wolf play last night, and we'd been at the show for, like, you know, like 15 minutes, the opener's playing, and suddenly we were like, is it okay for the like a baby to be at a fucking insanely loud metal show? Like, is the vibration, like, is the sound, and, like, we're, like, in the corner googling, like, do we need to, like, I don't, what do we do? Can we say? But apparently on Reddit, there's lots of metalheads who are like, I play in a metal band, and I've had a baby. My baby's fine. The hearing is great. So,
to be fair, they probably wouldn't notice if the baby was off. Oh man.
I guess they're kind of submerged in fluid, so that's like the best kind of earplugs you could have. And
yeah,
that's
right?
Probably really
their it's also apparently like really loud in utero. That's what Katie was reading, that like you're in this fluid and you're surrounded by heartbeat and blood coursing through, like and so people find that like a lot of times like newborns, like a white noise machine or something is good for them because they're so used to like a constant.
Yeah.
That without it, they're like, they freak out.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes 39-year-old men are like that too. You put me in a vehicle with a diesel engine and I'm asleep in 10 minutes.
You're just gonna run a generator all the time.
Yeah.
So Possession.
Yeah. Man. First question: what did I just watch?
Yeah. I don't know. I watched it like a couple years ago. Actually, a couple years ago, they were showing it on a big screen here in town, and there was this whole ordeal where I got tickets, and then I took Katie out, like we had dinner and then we're gonna go to the movie, and then realized that I had taken us out on the entirely wrong night. So we didn't get to see it on the big screen, but we went home and watched it. Like we didn't have a streaming service, so I think we found a way to watch it online.
Yeah.
And watched it basically on a really tiny screen, and we're just like, oh, that's fucked up. And I think like rewatching it, I watched the first half last night and then I picked back up this morning. I think the first time I saw it, I was just like, well, Isabel Adjani is beautiful and insane. And this is very gross. This is getting really literally gross. But I didn't like... What am I trying to say? I'm trying to say I came out of that first viewing being like, well, this is a fucked up movie. Wow. But watching it the second time, I was like, this is a fucked up movie. What am I watching? Like you know, you'd think that I would be like, oh, I've seen this. This is not as upsetting. No, it was even more, it bothered me even more. I don't know what I watched. I don't know. And I kept thinking the whole time, I was like, I gotta be able to say something smart about this. I have nothing smart to say about this movie other than, wow, this guy, the guy who made it, was going through something.
Well, we're in some pretty hot water here because I was hoping you were going to explain it all.
Damn. Actually, you know what I think? The thing I came up with is that I actually don't think that this is a piece of art that is intended to be like a coherent, rational thing. Like it seems much more like it seems really connected to the unconscious. It seems like thematically and sort of like in terms of its aims, I think it's really connected to the unconscious. So, you know, good luck analyzing that, or good luck really like getting your hands around it. And in terms of effect, or like, it's actual like the experience of watching it, I think it's it felt like it was intended to be an experience over like a thoughtful you know, some films you're like, okay, these guys are interrogating this idea and we're thinking about this. Like this seemed like this guy was wanted to make everyone feel how he felt.
Yeah, it's definitely that.
I mean, if he felt really terrible and upset, then he did a good job. So did I.
I think part of it too, and why it's called Possession, most multiple reasons, but it's also about in like relationships being possessed, not by the person you're with, but the idea of the person you're with.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And like, I like, cause that's definitely like, to like, to sum up the movie, it's about a guy who discovers his wife has been cheating on him. I mean, and that's the most bare bones, like simple, it's like way more crazy than that. And in a sense, like, initially she's cheating on him with another guy, but really she's cheating on like this ideal darker version of him. That's like, yeah, that is eventually replaces him.
Yeah.
And there's a similar thing with him where like she shows up as a twin. That's this like teacher. That's this very like virginal, like angelic version of her that he's obsessed with. But the reality of the relationship is this completely contentious, like fucked, like, oh my God, that scene where he meets her in that cafe and the way they sit, like they don't sit facing, they sit like at this corner, like in opposite directions. And it's so fucking intense.
That's the thing that jumped out to me. This watch was just how active, how active the camera is in this film, and just the compositions are consistently just like next level. It's just a really interestingly constructed film visually. I think the kind of overwhelming emotional intensity of the film can be the thing that grabs your attention at first, and it can be that it's easy to overlook, wow, this guy is doing some really interesting stuff with the camera, with design, with how shots are set up and how people are moving through space. And this time through, that really jumped out to me. I watched parts of it on mute actually, because it gets so like, it's so loud in places that I was like, I actually can't bear this right now. But yeah, I love that scene. Or like the one of the first things, like that he, you know, because he comes back, he's like a spy, he comes back from, I guess the idea is that he's been in East Berlin doing some kind of espionage work, and he comes back, that first meeting with his superiors, and there's all the lamps overhead look like flying saucers, like it looks like they're having this meeting underneath a fleet of
space boats.
Yeah.
And it's such a oh, go ahead. Brian.
They had that all set up in the corner instead of like straight square. Like that the kind of tension that it built, and it almost felt like a human wouldn't set this meeting up this way.
No.
It felt very much like the room is gigantic too, and they're occupying like a small portion of it. And it's like this like this is only going to exist for this meeting, and then we'll disappear and vanish. Like that's kind of what it feels like. There's a lot with like just the interiors that are in this movie, like everything looks, and seeing like the way everybody acts in this movie is like completely fucking unnatural.
The thing, the first time I saw the film, I was like, this is a movie about this relationship. The married couple are the ones who are possessed, and he's possessed with jealousy, she's possessed with this erotic obsession with another man, but everyone in the film is possessed. Seems like they're being ridden by something. God, the physical life, that's another thing that jumped out to me, is like the physical behavior in every scene is nuts. And it's not just the way the scenes are blocked or staged, it's the actual movements of the characters. There's the Heinrich, that's the name of the...
Yeah,
the
I was going to talk... I wanted to talk about him, yeah, specifically.
He comes to visit... I mean, he comes to visit the house. He's trying to get in the house because he thinks that she's there. And he's, like, basically, like, dancing. Like,
yeah,
it's almost a dance film in ways. God, it's nuts. They are all... his... is it Kurt? Mark. Mark is the protagonist. The way he like works that rocking chair throughout the film,
yeah,
like it's a really like I can't imagine what am I don't know what I'm trying to say other than that. Like it's just nice to watch a film that is so committed to not doing naturalistic acting, right? Like it's like weird, like it's expressionism or something. It's so intensely outside or beyond the pale of like normal human behavior. It commits to the bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of well, so even with Heinrich, right? Like the first time he goes over, Samuel's character Mark goes over to confront him, right? And it like that's the other thing, like the interiors of this space is like really awesome. Like it's like, oh, I would love to live like this guy with like all these plants and
Heinrich's books apartment and is so cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. And that guy is so weird. And like the way he holds Sam Neill's head and neck, like almost like he wants to kiss him or something. It's so fucking weird. And it feels like real threatening. And then like Mark attacks him and it's completely useless against this guy. And he knocks him down with the weirdest pirouette kung fu bullshit. Like, I don't even know what he's doing. This is the strangest goddamn thing I've ever seen do. And like everybody is like that. It's like they're in a different reality. It's like accepting like we're not this is like where we use like film as dream time. We're in that. Like that's what we're gonna go for. Yeah.
Yeah.
When sorry, you go.
Oh, sorry. Everybody was like kind of like written by something like you're saying. And I found that he like it was mentioned a couple times that he loved everything, like and everybody. And that was his imbalance. Like his possession was this like, maybe if I'm just positive all the time, you know, it's like the spiritual bypasser. And the other two, like the couple, like they're looking for some sort of divinity the whole time. Like there's some sort of like just trying to find something to pull them out of what seems like nihilism as a base level reality. And it's like this almost like a panic or a terror to try and get out of it. And so like, and I know like Samuel's character says a couple of times, mentions things about like just being alive, like the drugs or the fucking that gets you there. And he doesn't mention it, but then it becomes like the violence, right? And that like kind of becomes her god through this thing, which I'm not sure if it is him or if it becomes him later or what. But I do find it really interesting that the teacher seems like the original version of his wife. Like his wife might actually be an already made copy of this teacher. That's the worst version. Something that's then I don't know. There's something really weird going on with
that. Well, it's interesting. We do see his wife as an instructor, right? There's that section in the weird section in the middle where he's like watching a film of her, like, and it's all direct address. She's looking right into the camera, but she's like a ballet instructor who's like torturing that girl. The doubling throughout the film is really interesting. Sorry, I got a funny, I'm on my phone and I just got a funny text message. The doubling is really interesting. I also think I kept thinking about the unconscious, and a lot of the behavior in the film seems like and I don't want to say id, but it seems like it's all impulse. It's all either ecstasy or terror without the social mask, without the like the sort of like confines or structures that we put on to like be able to just be okay and like talk to each other. Everything seemed really extreme, like from the, you know, from the jump. And then it culminates, you know, like it's almost like, you know, like we're introduced to the idea of Heinrich. Okay, there's this lover that is another man, and he's a man. He's a sexual competition. He's got a nice apartment. like you were saying about the way he interacts with Mark and everyone. It's like, I feel like the bodies in the film are behaving without the social forms that we put on them. Like physical boundaries like don't exist. There's a scene Mark and the teacher are in the apartment and he is just like up on her. There's like it's not just the sort of spastic movements. There's like weird shit with proximity. People are either too close or too far away from each other. They're like coming at things from these really oblique angles. It felt very much like unmediated libidinal energy. Like, and I, when I say libidinal, I kind of mean like we'll say big tent libidinal. So like not just erotic, but also like violence and sort of like power, eroticism, terror, these big like unconscious forces, which is weird because in film we're kind of used to, we've been trained, I think, to expect film, because it's photography, to be like basically closer to real life, even if it's wildly you know, we know most of the films we're watching are actually pretty stylized, but the style is normal life. And so I think that's what, for me, jumped out this time, was like how much this filmmaker is like, nope, we're not doing that. We're going to go and like, we're going to go as far away from a naturalistic performance style as we can.
Something really kind of fucked with me, because while the content was not pleasant in any way, there was something really comforting about that.
It felt honest.
Part of it was just the early 80s aesthetic, which will always feel like some kind of weird home. But to our generation, I think. But like, I don't know. When you know you can kind of like let go of consensus reality and just relax into the experience, it gives you a chance to just let that part slide too, like, and just be there with it from that libidinal id. Even if it's like there's almost like less effort involved in that than being civil and trying to read people's faces and intuit like what's going on literally with the plot.
Which honestly, like, when relationships go bad, they will reach peaks of this state, right? Where like just the reason and everything just sort of disappears, and you just hit this like almost animalistic, like you're arguing and screaming at each other or something. It's like something you would never ever do. And there's like this potential, like there's like a fear there too, because there's just like, it feels like I'm at this real boundary line that I don't know if I'm going to fall over, and like I'm still trying to rein this in, and this movie is like living in that the whole time.
And there's like an intimacy there, like usually it's only the people we're closest to, and it's in those rare, really heightened moments that people see us at our most extreme, our least guarded. And so to spend time with these performers who are all at this place of extremity, it's an incredibly intimate experience. I wonder too about like is the film I wonder about the monster. Like,
yeah,
is this a science fiction movie about like a woman who's fucking a monster, or is it an expressionist? Is this a metaphor? Right? Are we like starting with a recognizable sexual rival in the form of Heinrich, and just pushing that until we're getting to like the most, like the grossest, most foreign, unnameable kind of like object, it's the object of desire, our beloved's object of desire, is like unknowable to us. And so it's also repellent. I don't know. I actually don't think that, I don't think the guy who made the movie knows. Like,
I don't mean
that as a criticism. I think sometimes I would. Because I actually think this is a really, whether he did it on purpose or it's just by accident, like, I think it's a really powerful document of, you know, because apparently he's going, like, the guy was going through a divorce. And I feel like he just, really captured something about the emotional experience, the psychological experience of experiencing betrayal and having a long-term relationship fall apart. And that's why I kept being like, how do you analyze this other than just like sit with it and be like, I'm just going to be with the film and see what it does. I was really tempted at the beginning because it seems like the filmmaker's a Polish director. The film takes place in Cold War Berlin. Like, there's a lot made of the wall is in all these shots. Like, there's all these shots of the wall. Sam Neill's character is involved in government hijinks. Like, so I was tempted to be like, is this a metaphor? How does this... and it seems like it's maybe it was supposed to be at one point in one draft. It's like it's a metaphor about the separation, like this divorce is also a divorce of the East and West. And then at a certain point, there was too many drugs or just too much anguish.
I kind of imagine it like when someone's going through a divorce and you go see them at the bar, you like run into them somewhere and you like ask about, well, I don't know, this week's sports game, and they're like, yeah, well, so and so, if they'd have just caught the ball, you can't count on anybody, like my fucking wife, literally. And they just like lose their shit. Like, it's like that just happened over a long drawn out period of making a film.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, no, it's definitely a political piece about like repressing all these desires because you have to in East Berlin. And then like it just turned into like, no, she's fucking a demon.
What's also interesting, like, because it's also the perspective of someone who'd lived in that versus like an outsider like analyzing it, right? Like that guy was in like a communist country, like Poland was communist at the time, and like I've watched a couple movies now set to that came from that era and like that time, and like I just think it's like you're kind of just like, this is reality, and it's not even about like what are the metaphors of that. It's just like, this is just kind of what it is, and like this is what I live in, and like, yeah, it's a very different thing versus how we see it as like Americans, is like, yeah, like the felt experience of that, right?
I was thinking about that last night when I was watching. I was like, what are people gonna like whenever America becomes what is gonna be next? Because it's something is gonna happen. Yeah. Something is happening. Like how, or even possibly, like how? Yeah, how are people watching our like films that come out of America? I mean, setting aside like Marvel movies, which are their own sort of like, I'm sure people are just like, well, yeah, there's the CIA. but the work that American artists are making, I wonder if there are people who live in different contexts who are like, oh yes, you can see
the impact of capital
in the
world that they're creating. It also seemed to me like there, at times I was like, man, you just, yeah, like something went off the rails while you were making this film and you just kept shooting. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank God. And, and then you found yourself in an editing room and were like, fuck, I've got, they paid me already. I gotta turn this into a movie. Like in the, so one of my favorite, like, moment, like, one of my favorite things to look for in films, and sidebar, Poor Things is a gold mine for this. The new Yorgos Lanthimos movie.
I love that movie.
I love when someone breaks on camera or forgets their line or fucks up and they just keep it. They just end up, it ends up making it into the final cut. Poor Things is great for that. Like, Mark Ruffalo cannot keep his shit together in that film, and there's numerous places where you can see him. There's like places where you actually see him check in. Like, he'll look off frame. You can sense him being like, are we still rolling? Okay, well, keep going. But in that section where she's talking to the camera, there's a section after the ballet lesson part where it's just this monologue about the two sisters, Faith and Charity, I think.
Yeah.
You can tell she's going up on lines. Like, you can tell she is forgetting what she's supposed to say. She's just like, they're, and they just keep rolling and start splicing it together. And it's marvelous. Like, it's marvelous outside of, like, I think aesthetically it's really interesting, but it's also just marvelous as a document of process. Like, that these are people, these are actual people who are making a work of art, and that's messy sometimes. There's a specific sigh that Isabel Adjani does in that section that I have heard in my own life as a director thousands of times. And it's the, I don't know what I'm supposed to say next sigh. And I heard it and I was like, she doesn't know. she doesn't know the next line. And she's crying. And now that she has just given up and is waiting for someone to say cut.
I mean, that with that, the effect that that had when she, you know, they provided it in this weird documentary format and he's watching it.
Yeah.
But when she was torturing that girl, like, that she's trying to dance and hold herself upright and she can't do it, and she tortures her and like looks at the camera as she's doing it, it made me feel like she was getting off on me watching her torture that girl.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like, it was so precise a feeling of like, you're enjoying this, and more than that, you're enjoying that someone's watching you do it.
Yeah.
Well, and that I mean, those are filmed by Heinrich, right? Like, the guy that's the other aspect of that.
I missed that part. I was just so lost.
Yeah.
That there were some like details what actually happened that I was just like, I don't know why we're watching this now.
Oh, like, yeah. There's definitely parts of the film that I was like, I don't know who that is. Something's happening. Really upset. That seems connected to the Soviet experience. That it's funny because I think we'll see more and more of this in Western art that's emerging now, but the idea of living in a surveillance state, her watching someone watching her, that feeling of surveillance. I mean, surveillance is a big part of the film. There's that literal section where they drop off a movie of her activities for him to watch, but there's, the film is full of spooks, you know. There's always people showing up to be like, where, you know, like, what is his name? The well, there's the detective, that the first detective that goes to her new apartment, the lair of the whatever that thing is, and then poorly, and then someone else goes after them. But they're, I guess I'm getting away from my point, which is that the film seems to be full of outside eyes. Like there's us, the audience, but there's also the characters in world. There are watchers.
Yeah.
And our bait, you know, is that another form of possession, right? Like if you're always being watched, do you belong to yourself or are you a possession? Are you possessed by like that's a pet or in a zoo? I don't think that's like the main thesis of the film, but like
no, but that's interesting.
It was also interesting how his whole like demanding to know where she is and what's going on and all that shit like plays into him being a fucking spy. Like
yeah.
it was kind of odd that he hired like a private detective. Like it's like you actually have the skills to do this yourself, or you probably have friends or something, but like no.
What it kind of plays to the like I'm impotent at this situation.
Yeah.
Right? This is beyond me and I'm incapable of rising to this occasion, like, so I have to find someone else to do this. Yeah,
which in the very first scene, like, they're talking about how does this happen to us, and it like you get the vibe that he couldn't get it up.
Oh yeah.
And so it's yeah, kind of the metaphorical and literal happening.
Yeah, there's certainly, I mean, yeah, the sexual insecurity or sexual neuroses is like running through the piece, and that's what I think is like why this is like it's a cult classic, not just because it's like batshit crazy, but because there's like a lot of really interesting stuff. Like there's a number of veins of different kinds of material running through it, and there's like that that sexual fear, sexual paranoia, insecurities around performance and fidelity and the possessiveness of like your mind certainly are there. He even like when they're doesn't he like he goes to bed with the teacher, but what does she say? She's like, you don't have to make love with me. And he's like, I'm not trying. There was another place where I was like, oh, he's, yeah, he can't perform. Poor guy.
Word.
Also, I mean, I'm trying to think of where, like, because it's actually kind of tangential to what we're talking about, but like this is also I don't think I've ever seen a movie where I've seen a woman more terrifying. Like she's fucking scary. Like the close-ups of her face where she's like, yeah, like there's one specific, it's a famous close-up and she just looks insane. And yeah, that's a terrifying thing too, like it, like being in a relationship with someone and then you know, the, like we're talking about, like the mask falls away and then you see the chaos that's potentially there. Yeah. and it's and yet you want this person still.
Well, yeah, that's like the terror of real intimacy, right? Is like getting to see other people when without the mask.
Yeah.
Or masks plural, right? Like getting to see people what they're in extremis. Yeah, there's some really it might not be conventional work, but the acting in the film is like, I think, pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And it because it seems like they were just like, okay, we're gonna go there. Like, we bought the ticket, so we're gonna take the ride and just keep it rolling because we're losing our minds.
It's funny that last time you came on, we did Firewalk with me because, like, acting wise, there is a similar sort of like wildness. It definitely was dialed up more in this, but there's that. I almost want to call it like ultra drama or something.
Yeah.
It just feels like it's this next level. It's really exactly like you're saying. It's like everyone was just like it rained hallucinogens and it absorbed in all of their skin at the same time. And so everyone just went into this like exaggerated, like the, you know, the mask just burns away and everyone like this fucking close to your face, you know?
Yeah. When it's like, you know, it's something funny. You hear Nicolas Cage, who some people make fun of. I think he's one of the great American actors.
Yes. Yeah.
First in his technique as shamanic. Like he describes his acting technique as shamanic. And I certainly am deeply invested in like the ritual roots of theater and performance. And I do think that your like world-class actors are practicing a form of channeling at the very least, and are playing it's shamanic work. And I think that I think you see that in both those films. David Lynch seems to ask that of his performers in a way that's like heavily influenced by like his own like weird Americana. Like with David Lynch, it feels like soap opera plus, like it feels like it's like the emotional intensity of soap opera dialed up to surrealism. And this feels like it's weird because I don't have the vocabulary, I think, or like we don't have the time to like go into like Eastern European actor training techniques, but like, and I know he's a Polish director, but like the intensity of the physical work and the emotional intensity in Possession it is very Eastern European coded to me, and reminds work of some specific like theater companies that came out of like communist Eastern Europe. And it's and that is like explicitly religious. Like I'm thinking of the work of a theater director named Jerzy Grotowski, who coined the phrase "the holy actor," and like his whole, you know, many many decades long career was focused on the actor as a victim, burnt at the stake, signaling through the flames, like. He actually even like spent years in Haiti training with a mambo, and like they were like, "Well, you should stay and just do this." And he was like, "No, I think I'm gonna go teach at UC Irvine now." And then, but yeah, Grotowski, he's a like that's a whole other like wormhole to go down. But
I've heard of him. Yeah,
yeah, he's a biggie. Like he's for the 20th century, he's like pretty revolutionary and pretty foundational. And his later work after Haiti, not surprising, was based on songs and was based on singing these really old, at first Haitian and then like songs from like slave songs from the American South. And the idea that these songs, old songs, had built into them access to something really old, and that singing is like one of the first things that humans did, and that actors could, by singing these old songs in a really specific and embodied way, can make room for I worked with some of these people, not him, but some people who had worked with his successor, and they always talk about grandma. They're like, what we're doing with the song is making room for grandma to show up. And it's really fascinating work. It's like, it's fun. And it's like, it's the closest thing I've seen in like, sort of contemporary actor training to just be like, yeah, we're doing magic.
Huh?
That's amazing. That's, really cool to hear. I'm like particularly fascinated with the merging of music and magic. Like it's, yeah. They're both a huge part of my story, but they have not interwoven. Like, it's like, you can feel.
I got to step away for a second.
it's like one of those things you can feel building, and you know at some point they're going to have to integrate. But
yeah,
that's really cool. That's somewhere I could like poke around and
look. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's my practice of that is sort of removed because I tend to function in the like the ritual work we do that is performance based. I'm functioning as a director, so I'm not doing it. But Katie, as a musician and a performer, she's doing a lot of other work it's not my business to talk about. I would say her music practice is explicitly magical.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Her stuff is really good too.
She's got thank you. B, I agree. C, she's got a whole bunch of new material that she's not recorded yet, but that she's been playing live with she's been playing these live shows with a cello player and a violin player, and the material is just awesome. It's so good. So I keep being like, I know we've got to do this baby, but you got to record these songs, man. I think she's playing. She's got one more show. She's going to do one more show in April before she takes a little break for baby time.
I've known quite a few like really dedicated musician mom that like weren't moms and then became moms. And like, I feel like they just got better somehow.
Yeah.
What that is, I don't know if there's some kind of like maybe it gets the creative energy flowing in a new way or something.
Yeah, I think again, like I say this as someone who will never give birth, but not with that attitude. You know what, you're right, I can do it. If I put my mind to it, anything is possible. But like, you know, Katie and I were just talking about like Western discomfort with we keep hearing people be like, oh, it's so hard to have the baby and then they aren't sleeping and it's just so hard. And we're like, well, this sounds like it's really about like weird productivity culture and like discomfort with like stepping out of your routine and shifting your rhythm to be present in what is a major like biological event, a long like biological / spiritual event that is up there with death, right? Like, I mean, like it's, you are at the precipice of the big thing. And we don't, as Western people, like we don't want anything to do with that.
Yeah.
You know, we want to like cart grandma off to die with some strangers and we'll show up maybe for the memorial. And we don't want to be anywhere near the messiness of birth. And it's like, it's been interesting, like wanting to like not fall into that trap. I think like we're both people who are operant, or we try to live pretty close to mystery and so forth and such, but we're also like pretty fucking embedded in American suburban, like we're school teachers who are like, yeah.
I mean the other missing part of that too is that like people had a tribe, so like the parents weren't necessarily exhausted in the same way because there was other people that kind of helped.
Exactly. Like, community.
We don't do that at all. Yeah.
Well, what a thunk.
It's also interesting. I've noticed that like all the friends I've had that have had kids over the years, the ones that seem to just be like chill about it, like it's just like they don't even seem like it's different for them, are the artists and the musicians.
Yeah,
because they're the ones who are sleeping weird hours anyway, sacrificing comfort for inspiration, for productivity in a different kind of way.
Yeah.
So there's this sort of sense of being a little bit more afloat and a little bit more in tune to calls to action that aren't regulated by the clock necessarily.
Yeah.
And I think that, that just makes, like, if you're already an artsy, like, difficult person for structured people to deal with, you're probably going to be good at parenting.
Yeah. I think we're lucky in that we have a in our community, there's a couple of women who are friends of ours who have given birth in the last couple of years, and who have been, I think, I can't speak for Katie, but I think have been good resources in terms of being like, of saying that kind of that exact sort of thing. Like, you're going to need to give in to this new rhythm. But who also, like, they show up, like, they're at art spaces with their tiny little babies. And they're like, this baby is now part of our life. Our life didn't stop for the baby. The baby is now our new little best friend who is a part of our life. Welcome, baby. Yes, the baby's crying because it's a baby. We're gonna, do you want to hold the baby? Right? Like that idea of having a community to help, I think, is really huge. Which has also nothing to do with the film Possession. Sorry. Yeah.
well, no, but I also think there's so many opportune moments for real humor there, where you can, like, oh, the baby's crying. Why isn't your art better?
Yeah. Definitely. Everybody's a critic.
It's picking up on how much this sucks, man. You can try harder. Yeah. Come on.
Like, kids are on. Used to say, man, I used to work with a children's theater, and we would always say, like, the kids, little kids especially, are like the most honest audiences. You will know if they enjoy what you're doing, and you will know when they don't. They're not going to just sit there politely and be like, yes. No, they're going to start talking. They're going to throw shit at you.
Amazing. Well,
which
I do.
Babies are just,
well, go ahead, Brian.
Babies are just like under the same hallucinogen as everyone in the movie Possession, except they don't have any, like, built up demons yet, so they're just like honest and like la la la. I mean, sure, you bring some shit with you, but you know.
Also, I think you're right.
I do want to, like, I think we have to talk about what may be the closest, I think, to, I don't know if exorcism is the right word, but that the moment in the subway tunnel.
Oh yeah.
Where she, I think his direction for her, he was like, fuck the air, is what he told her. And like, just what, watching what she does, and then how it culminates with this, like, expulsion of this, like, crazy, like, goo. It is, like, one of the most insane things I've ever seen on film, and feels so magically true.
Yeah. That,
yeah.
It's really potent. I don't know in what way. Like, it's just, like, really, really potent. And the something about the goo coming out of the ears, and it's like mostly pus, but there's some blood mixed in, and it really got me. And
frothy, it was ears for me too.
Almost all of that scene was one shot too. Like,
yeah.
She had to felt the next day like she got hit by a semi truck.
Yeah, they needed to have given her a day off.
Yeah,
and we can do that, and we get that on camera. I'm like, hey, I'll see you next week. You go take some baths.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a remarkable. I mean, that's the thing. It's like every time I come up with, like, or have the impulse to sort of criticize the film on, like, some kind of formal level, I just come back to what a remarkable document it is of like, there's this thing in in my experience where like you're making a play or you're making a film or you're making whatever, and like you do all this prep work and you're thinking about what you're trying to communicate and how you're going to do it, and you've got this whole idea in your head, but that changes as soon as you get in the like a rehearsal room with performers. It shifts. And you have to, if you're smart, you're going to be like, you're going to let it shift and you're going to like ride that shift. And Possession just feels like such an exemplary, I want to say exemplary example. And that would be weird to say. It's just a great example of like people doing that. Like more than anything, it feels like a document of really committed artists going for it and achieving something that is like really hard to categorize, really hard to define, but undeniably effective and undeniably potent. The whole film feels haunted. Like, I mean, the performances, but the whole thing feels like it's got juice.
Yeah, it's almost like the filmmaker was her in the subway, and all those movements and the goo was the movie.
Yeah. And I mean, it's weird. Like, there's like a thin line between self-indulgent and incredibly generous. And so I think I want to give him the benefit of the doubt and say, like, what a generous act to put that kind of, to capture that kind of pain and that kind of, that kind of pain. And it's such a personal experience, and to capture that and then share it with the world.
I guess on the one hand, you could almost feel more comfortable banking that most people wouldn't get it and they would just be confused or outraged or whatever. And there's almost like a buffer, like a safety buffer there. So like anyone who gets it will actually see you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. There's I can't remember who said it. There's a quote I really love that is, the best place to hide a secret is in a novel. And I think that is like, that speaks to this somehow, that like, when you make art, you're given like enough of a shroud, like you're wrapping your guts in the formal, like the formal piece is this shroud you're wrapping around something really, really personal, and love it or hate it, you can kind of rely on the fact that most people aren't going to be able to see through the shroud. They're going to see that the shape your pain makes, that like informs the shape of the shroud. And they're going to be like, okay, cool. But the people who do see it are going to see you, and they're going to be able, like, if they're sensitive enough to see through it and see that inner core, they're probably like, I don't want to say good, that's a stupid word, but like there's some sort of communion that's happened, and they are your people. And then you've done the thing that I think most artists are trying to do in some deep way, which is communicate. It's just, wow, he wrapped a really fucked up shroud around his pain.
Many tentacled silhouette.
Oh my God.
Going to places, where are those tentacles going? I don't know.
Another impressive thing is like, this was basically like early 80s on the border of Soviet tentacle porn. Which is just, if you put that all together in context, like, it's amazing that this happened at all.
There's a special feature on the DVD I watched where like he's like, so how did you pitch this to the producer? And he was like, it's about a woman who fucks an octopus. that was what he said.
The producer was like, yes, where do I sign? How much do you need? That's good.
I mean, but if you got a producer, you say that too, and they're like, I'm in, and you're like, okay, now we're cooking. Yeah.
Come on, that's the golden ticket.
Now I can do what I really want to do.
Which is a movie about my divorce.
Yeah.
What is so with it being so heightened and like what makes it not overacting? Right? Like, because there's an easy way where like the wrong people do this and it's just painful and stupid. Yeah. And it's none of that. And that too is like how do you get there? Like what the fuck? What are you? What you're like?
Total commitment.
Yeah. I guess
because I think
it's that it's real. It's like it's authentic expression. Like they're not faking it. They're it's total commitment. I think that's what I think.
Yeah, I feel like when people do it and you feel that it's not landing, it's because they're still a sliver of themselves. Like worried about how it looks.
Yeah.
Like when there's any part of them holding back, something in you can smell bullshit because in that moment, what's being asked of you is vulnerability. Yeah. And if you can smell bullshit, you cannot get there.
Yeah. 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 I totally agree. It's like, you're being asked by being asked to witness something that like that intense, that's a vulnerable position to show up and witness it. And so there has to be a good faith agreement being made between both parties that we're both going to show up in our full vulnerability. And when one party is protecting themselves, even if it's just like that, the tiniest bit, it's, you can sense it and it falls apart. And I think that's one of the key jobs of the actor is the actor has to take the first step forward, like in that vulnerability, in that total commitment to whatever the agreement is, so that the audience can too, so the audience can show up as well. Like that's why not everyone can act. That's why it doesn't always work. There's all sorts of technical skills that the performer needs. A nice voice and able to interpret text, and they should be able to move. Like all that stuff is certainly very important, but like I think if not the most important, certainly like central to the work of a really special performer or actor is the ability and willingness to like show up completely. To take the first step into vulnerability, which then allows the whole thing to happen, right? Mm-hmm. If performance is an encounter between, well, really like performance is a three-way encounter between audience, performer, and text. It can't happen unless that first step is taken. The actor stepping towards the audience member with the text, and I use text in a really broad, way, but like stepping forward with the material and saying, here it is, I'm here with you, that invites the audience in to do the same. And when they don't do it, when they're just gesturing toward it, it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then we all ourselves.
For an actor to like even be able to achieve that, it strikes me that it's like there's a shamanistic element within their private life or practice that would be required to be able to access fully certain things.
Yeah.
It's not in a official capacity or something that's called shamanism, right? Like there's, that is what's taking place in that journey to know oneself well enough to be able to access and maneuver.
Agreed. And I wonder, I can't remember if we've talked about this before, but like, I think that part of the reason, the modern celebrity movie star or rock star for that matter so often succumbs to issues of addiction or extreme narcissism or other like spiritual maladies is because the explicit shamanistic nature of the work at hand has been removed. Like we don't acknowledge it. And so like you think about an actor, how many different faces they're putting on, how many different entities they're perhaps allowing to come through them over the course of a career, and without any hygiene built in around managing that, like, it's going to fuck you up if you don't know how to. And I think there are actors who would, if you said they were a shaman, would be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Mm-hmm. Who have still managed to create for themselves what we would recognize as spiritual hygiene. Like, who know how to manage the energy that's coming through, and the work that's being done in a way that's going to make it healthy and not dangerous.
Mm.
Do you think that there are any, are there any other holy actors like Nicolas Cage that have a similar degree of commercial success?
I think that Daniel Day-Lewis is like, takes the work seriously to that level. And it's why, and actually he is actually, I just saw this. The reason he said he retired is because he's like, this is doing spiritual damage to me. This is like, this is actually spiritually dangerous to do the work in the way that I'm doing it. And I would like to not, I'd like to not be infected with devils.
Yeah, that's really good to, refreshing to hear. Yeah. Someone recognized. I've always said, like the best actors have to be either completely insane or like capital G genius.
Yeah. Or like have developed like some kind of a access point for genius in a way in and a way out, you know. It's interesting. Actor training is really interesting in the same way that I think, like, we talk about psychology or psychiatry as like basically doing magic, but like not wanting to admit
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Like, look at most actor training, and it's like, you are okay. That's cool. Like, you don't have to admit what you're doing, but I know what you're doing.
Forget who said that. That quote about like, it's hard to define magic, but you know it when you see it.
Yeah.
But like, man, that, I mean, it rings true for anyone who does know it. It's,
yeah,
like that movie was magic. I can't tell you what it was doing, but it, exactly.
But it was doing magic.
Yeah.
And that's why, I mean, that's why the subject of magic is endlessly fascinating, right? It's because it's for that exact reason. Like, you know it when you see it. It's something all human cultures have done. It can work in all these different ways. Like, it's, oh my God, his name's escaping me. Lon Milo Duquette, who said, like, works in theory. Wait, no, is it him? Who's, or is it Pete Carroll? The magic works not in theory.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's endlessly fascinating because it shows up in almost all human endeavor, whether it's cooking or art making or engineering or teaching or whatever, or farming. Like there are magical practices associated and attached to it, that just at this point in time are not being called that or recognized as such.
I found out something really interesting like a while back, but that a lot of like corporate execs and super high rolling businessmen type folk like will go to Thailand and get like ghost tattoos for enchanted speech and shit. Like,
that's amazing.
But like they're with ghost oil, so they're invisible, and so you can like lick the Salika bird tattoo on the back of your hand before you walk into the meeting to like enchant your words and shit. And it's like yeah, corporate people do magic.
Yeah.
And it aside from like the outsourcing part, like you're saying, like it can just manifest. Like, someone can be magical and be doing magic in their career and like getting themselves ahead their whole life, I never really pieced together that that's what it is. There's like, it's not subconscious exactly, but it's not conscious either. It's somewhere in this middle, like liminal space where you're like aware it's a thing, but you don't put a name to it. And you just, it's a mechanism that works. So you engage with it and you're aware you're engaging with it, but it doesn't go any further than that as far as like dissecting.
That's interesting because I think a good definition of, I mean, this is, it's folly to try to define magic, but like one of my working definitions for magic is, I don't know how to articulate this, so I shouldn't have started to say it. It's basically, it has something to do with bridging the unconscious and the conscious, that there is like developing that relationship, finding ways to span that gap. That seems to me to be really tied up in what, at least for me, what magic is. And that's how it shows up in my art practice for sure.
I almost feel like there's something about bridging the gap, like filling in space between, and like having enough communication go back and forth that it sort of paves a pathway so that there's less of a jump between the two.
Yeah, each time, it's funny. You talk about like magical practice showing up in places where we're not acknowledging it. I was in a staff meeting the other day where they're talking about how relationships are built through proximity and repetition, and I'm like, you're talking about ritual, like, and how each time we do the ritual, each time we reconnect. Either each time we do the ritual or each time I reconnect with these people I'm working with, we have more in common. We have more points of connection. And so communication is easier. The work happens better, whatever that means. But that idea of filling in the gaps, of finding and strengthening points of connection between the seen and the unseen, the conscious and the unconscious, the material and the spiritual. That's like, I think that's the thing. That's the good stuff.
Our friend Tim and I were just talking about this the other day, how like the hard lines or boundaries between beings only exist in the like hard manifest world. Like,
yeah.
Like I've never met Tim in real life, but I can laugh out loud from something I see in my daily life that because he would have laughed at it.
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't have noticed if he wasn't in my, like, so there's like, Tim is with me.
Yeah.
This thing with me. And like that, the people you interact with become part of it. And they, like, if to spirits, we all just look like this tangled mess of like composite beings, I'm sure.
Yeah.
We're all made up of all these other people, spirits and humans, that and every being that we know. But we have this idea that there's like a hard line somehow. And I think that's all just cope. Like it's just a big coping mechanism.
Yeah. I have a friend right now who's having a really hard time with that specifically, because he's very sensitive and is, I think he might deny this, but I think he's in more communication with the constellation of entities that make him up and are around him right now than he is able to comfortably manage. And on the one hand, I'm like, well, I mean, you're experiencing probably something closer to reality, but you've also got to figure out how to, it's affecting your ability to function, or not function, have the success you want to have in the material world, because like it's overwhelming to you. And so that's been a tricky thing to observe, because you don't know how to I mean, there's suggestions you can make for how to help, but also it's like you're on your.
This is part of it.
Yeah, this is part of it.
Yeah.
And I just, if you need someone to like bail you out, let me know.
It's a really tricky position to be in because it's only been a few hundred years that, like, maybe longer, and depending on where, but like, there should be people that come find you and be like, oh, you're coming with us for training. Like,
yeah.
We're supposed to have tribal elders and like teachers that have generationally passed down wisdom to help the people who are extra sensitive navigate. Or even if it's just a phase, maybe it's just like there's an awakening and everything's all coming at once because it's this period of time where that shit just starts happening. And maybe it settles down after. But there aren't standard roles coming to help. It's
There's not, we don't have people in place to manage and facilitate, and in fact we have a lot of unhelpful cultural expectations about madness just are unhelpful in the extreme. And so people who could have a fully like a rich and fruitful experience of their sensitivities end up afraid and isolated and really struggling.
Yeah. And then like these things don't just go away either. What often ends up happening is there isn't even any impetus socially speaking to deal with it or to face it because it's not productive, right? It's a waste of time.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with it? Is it going to bring home the bacon?
Can you extract capital from it?
Yeah. If not, you know, what's the point? And also I think anyone's afraid of being annoying, but more than that, there's and being a pariah or whatever. But more than that, I think the more that mental health awareness gets talked about, the less that people who are actually being bothered by spirits feel comfortable with talking about it.
Yeah. Because they're like, oh, it's pathologizing something that's actually like 9 times out of 10, a natural, it's just a part of being in reality and in the world.
Some kind of propaganda for normalcy when normalcy isn't actually a thing if you've ever met more than one person.
Yeah, right.
You've actually ever gotten to truly know more than one human being. Like, yeah, you know, there's no such thing as normal. There's this huge, vast array of like constellations of consciousness. And
yeah. And it's glorious.
Have you ever met anyone that is like normal? It's fucking scary. Those people are no good. Stay away from those people.
those people are wrapped in so many layers of like sheet metal to like hold anything authentic about themselves at bay inside that you're like, you are going to explode and shoot up a post office.
The kind of person that ends up a ghost when they die. Like,
yeah, exactly. Y'all, I've never had to pee so bad in my life, but I don't want to take you to the bathroom with me. So I'm gonna step away from this for a moment.
Okay.
It's fine.
Normally I would stay here and vamp, but I'm gonna go throw away the remains of my breakfast.
Maybe Brian will just leave this in. Is a nice pause, and you guys can think about what you would say about possession.
You know, the other thing about this is interesting. I watched this movie probably about a month ago, and you guys just watched it, and yet I think my experience of it is just as vivid as you guys.
That's because it's a trauma.
It is.
It's like, yeah, like, I remember every second of that day. That day was horrible.
It's upsetting.
It's so fun, though, because it's like, yeah, that was awful. I loved that movie.
Yeah.
That was great.
I told Katie I was doing this, and I was like, so I got to watch Possession this week. And she was like, okay, well, I will not be around for that.
I don't want our kid's a little young.
Yeah, but then this morning, so like I couldn't finish it last night. And this morning I'm watching it, and she's sitting in the living room with me, not watching it. She's like facing away from it. But like every couple months, she's like, this movie. Fuck up. This movie is wild. Yeah, it really is. And I had totally forgotten. I mean, the bit at the end where the double of Mark shows up, like the very end.
Yeah.
I thought I'd gotten to like the point where I had accepted all the like wildness of the film had to offer. And then like in like the last minute of the movie, they're like, oh, but also. What? At a certain point in this movie, you're like, y'all are just trying to see what you can get away with. Like, you keep adding new fucked up wrinkles.
That's all. Almost-
you're trying to get me to turn this off, aren't you? Yeah, because it's amazing. It's so good.
That's like exactly what I was saying to Kurt before you got on the call. Was like, I was like, okay, so this was just a series of me thinking I had it figured out and then getting like slapped in the face until I gave up.
You're like,
I almost feel like that's what happened in the editing room. Was like, okay, this makes too much sense now. I'm gonna add this scene here, and then. Yeah. Like, because I don't want anyone to think that it makes sense, because then they're missing the point.
Well, it makes me wonder, A, I think, A, yes. B, like, I wonder if some of it is, like, I'm sure Wikipedia could tell me this. I don't know exactly, or can't remember exactly, where the filmmaker was living when the film was made. Like, I wonder if there's some obfuscation that's happening because of the Soviet bloc situation. It's like you read a lot of like science fiction, like Eastern European science fiction, that seems to be science fiction for its own sake, but also seems to be like, well, if I write this story about the life I'm living under these political conditions, I will disappear. What if I make it a science fiction movie or book? I wonder if there's some of that going on. And then in my less generous moments, I'm like, this guy wanted to make a spy movie. He wanted to make a movie about a marriage breaking up. He wanted to make a movie about this weird tentacle porn fetish he's got. He made several short films and then was like, oh, I'm supposed to turn in a feature. Let her edit these all together. But it works. It's a hell of a ride.
I kind of want there to be an interview somewhere where someone asks him what it's all about, and he's like, ah, I just thought it was cool. That's cool, man.
He's like, I mean, all the part with, you know, well, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. What I really wanted was I wanted like a tentacle demon thing to fuck somebody for a while, but you can't just do that. So I had to put a movie around it.
Yeah, to build a movie around weird sex toy that I fuck at my house.
That's actually his personal. That's not a. Yeah.
Oh no!
Forward to when like society gets so degraded that like that's what real sex toys look like. People are just bored with the pretty girl ones. And they're like, yeah, no, I'm gonna get me a tentacle demon sex toy. They're prehensile.
I bet if you made like if you marketed an exact replica of the demon from Possession, you could sell it like as a sex toy, and you could, like, sell like froth lube to go with it, like bloody pus froth lube. Oh,
well, I'm of the contention if they ever do get to that point where they're making like sex robots, it will rapidly degrade into like
how do we make these into the weirdest, strangest things? Like when you, because there's a thing like that happened with, like there's a certain type of car where it's all about like the, how much bass it has. And they reached a point where they just like, they were taking the engines out and putting more speakers. So it's not even really a car anymore. It's just this thing that is, and like, if we have sex robots, that's going to happen where it's not even about it being a fetish or it's just going to be the strangest fucking thing people can think to do.
Yeah. And if someone will pay for it, get made.
Here's the thing people don't seem to think about with sex dolls and things like that, though. It's like you can make like a poppet and invite a spirit to live in it. So if you're pouring sexual energy into this effigy of a human,
you're making something weird.
What the fuck are you inviting into your home?
Well, there's a documentary about the people who buy those, and there is one guy that they profile in it where he is in a relationship with this thing.
The one guy who answered and was like, "Yeah, I'll do your documentary."
Oh yeah, I mean, there's a certain level of fucked up baseline there too.
Would love to talk to you.
We finished with that thought. Sorry.
About the really insane sex dolls.
Yeah, I thought there was more coming.
Oh, that thought is never finished. It's just continuing on.
That's eternal. It's outside of time.
The eternal sex doll.
Yeah, I'm like picturing like Plato and Socrates talking
about
it. Yeah. The age-old question.
Fucking a dodecahedron?
No.
I think Matt went somewhere even worse. Okay.
Hey, you know, I'll try anything.
I think they have so you have to try it 10 times.
All right. Math jokes.
I think I ran out of things to say. You guys got stuff to say?
No. I gotta take a shower.
You gotta wash possession off of you.
I do, man. This shit's fucked up. I'm sorry, but this is, it's like, I will back it as an accomplishment and an achievement in world cinema, but I'm not gonna watch it ever again. Once was honestly enough, and going back to watch it again for this, I was like, twice is at least one too many. I'll recommend it to people who haven't seen it. I'll be like, you should definitely watch it. Don't blame me for what it does to you, but
it has
it's a literal virus. It's a literal.
It has a similar feel to like going back to the sushi place you got sick at.
Yeah, exactly. I smelled it and was like,
whoa. But it is cheap.
Look, it's cheap. And they got the sake I like.
It's actually free if you don't mind Spanish subtitles.
And I don't.
Well,
it was good talking to you guys.
Yeah. This was really awesome. Really nice to catch up a little, and congratulations again. That's so exciting. And this was really nice to have your perspective on this, because I think if we had done this with anybody that didn't have as much like theater experience, it would have just been us like, yeah, fuck, for like 2 hours. Just fuck.
I mean, I think that's a fair response to the film. Really. Is fuck. I just feel bad. I mean, like, I'm in awe of those performers, but I just feel so bad for them. Oof.
Well, I mean, Sam Neill got to do Jurassic Park, so don't feel bad for him. He's immortal.
Yes, and I think that if you were in the film Possession, you immediately entered the Hall of Legend. Like, they're good. But damn.
Oof. It's like, what's playing Laura Palmer? Like, it's like, yeah, that's, you're done. That's all you came here to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, you did the thing. Well done. I hope that you saved money from your paycheck, because you're not going to work. You're not going to do anything else, because you did the thing that you came to do.
I guess we, I guess we did the thing we came to do too.
We did the thing we came to do.
We did it.
This is it. It was this episode all along.
You just hear gunfire.
Take it away. Trying to take it away from me. All right.
Oh, after we stopped recording, I want to ask you something, Matt. So,
yeah, take that, audience.